The yellow and black checker cab nosed its way down 2nd Avenue in the rain. A newsboy in a sodden cap wove in and out through the slow-moving cars, hawking copies of the New York Sun. A man in a Plymouth exchanged coins for a newspaper as the drivers behind him honked. Eleanor Moskowitz, perched on the edge of the back seat, didn't bother looking at her watch because she had just looked at her watch. It had been 9:29 then. It would be 9:30 now. In 15 minutes, Eleanor had a job interview at the Markham School on 71st and West End Avenue, 13 city blocks down, plus the width of Central Park away. It was unlikely that she was going to be on time. "Why is there so much traffic?" she asked the driver.
"Water main break somewhere near here? And President Truman is in town," the driver said. "I'll bet you dollars to donuts. The traffic's backed up all over the east side."
Eleanor slid over toward the window and rolled it down, letting a fine mist into the cab. To her left, directly alongside the cab, there was a horse hitched to a dark red wagon. She was almost parallel to the animal and could see the sag of his belly, the matte black of his coat. He shook his head and snorted, as if in sympathetic frustration at the delay.
"Hey, do you mind closing the window?"
said the driver, his irritation apparent.
"It's getting all wet back there."
"Sorry." Eleanor rolled the window up again. She stared at the back of the driver's thick neck. His graying hair had been shorn by a razor, like all the soldiers demobilized from the army a couple of years back. The war was a memory now, but certain images, like all those gawky boys with their fresh-cropped heads, stuck. Sweat started to pool under Eleanor's arms, and she took off the jacket of her navy crepe suit and laid it carefully across her lap so it would not crease. Her pocketbook and her umbrella, black silk with a bone handle, sat beside her. A navy hat made, like all her hats, by her mother, fit snugly on her head. Although it was fashioned from finely woven straw, the hat was still making her perspire, but she wouldn't take it off for fear it might get crushed. She had been so nervous about today's interview that she'd been unable to sleep the night before. Around 5, she finally drifted off, and then sat up with a horrified start when she realized she'd slept right through the alarm and it was almost 8:30. Her mother had had an early morning appointment, and so no one had been there to rouse her. She dressed in a rush, cursed the rain that had splattered against the apartment's windows, and once she was out in the street, decided to splurge on a taxi. Amazingly, the checker cab had pulled up right to the corner of 2nd Avenue and 84th Street just as she stepped out of her building. She sprinted up to claim it and hurriedly climbed in. But now the cab was barely moving. Eleanor looked down and discreetly straightened the seams of her new nylons. Not that the driver was paying attention. He was hunkered down over the wheel, muttering about the traffic. She sighed. It was not like Eleanor to be late, especially not for something as important as a job interview, and not when she needed a job so badly. She'd turned in her resignation at the Brandon Wythe School just 2 days ago, feeling her hand had been forced by the Lucinda Merriweather incident. Lucinda had been an excellent student, one of the very best Eleanor had encountered, yet Eleanor didn't like her. Her insights were delivered in a slightly mocking tone, as if the class, and Eleanor, were somehow beneath her. She'd also been the ringleader of a small group that had ganged up on Mary Watson, a shy, plump girl with a painful stutter, until Eleanor had stepped in. So when Eleanor discovered Lucinda had plagiarized a paper on Emily Dickinson, she hadn't been entirely surprised. The girl was intellectually gifted, but morally suspect. Eleanor had taken the whole matter to Mrs. Holcomb, the headmistress of the school, confident of her support. She had been wrong. And so she'd had no choice but to resign and scramble to find another job. Odious as the whole business with Lucinda Merriweather was, its outcome had a silver lining. It gave Eleanor a reason to leave her job, a reason she could admit to in public. That she had another compelling reason to go, well, that she didn't have to tell anyone. Ever. Starting back in the fall, she had allowed Ira Greenfield, who taught physics, to slip his hands not only under the cups of her cotton brassiere, causing her small, startled nipples to jump to attention at the unfamiliar caress, but also under the scalloped hem of her slip, beyond the tops of her stockings, the metal clasps of her garter belt, and right inside her underpants. The gentle pressure of his thumb against that strange, nameless bit of flesh at her very core had been so intoxicating and addictive that she allowed these liberties to continue, despite the fact that they took place without the reassuring benefit of a ring, gold, or even one capped with the merest chip of a diamond on her finger.